From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Marina.
The E.
Trow Hill. The dirty 94107.
I'm from Israel, living in Santa Clara.
Coming up, we're going to be joined by the rock star of radio, Ira Glass.
It's Ira Glass here.
You're the MC on the show, Ira.
I am the MC on the show, yes.
Oh, great.
That's right. Ira Glass is here, and he's going to help us cruise around the Bay Area radio dial. First, we'll travel back in time to when radio got its start.
It's just Morse code. It's just beeps in the air.
Then we'll bring the Caribbean to California through Radio Habana, and we'll hear about the nation's first bilingual radio station.
They bought little transistor radios, and they went around the neighborhoods and gave every family one of those, and literally created their listenership from that.
It's a special hour-long edition of Cross Currents with our guest host, Ira Glass. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're bringing you a special hour-long edition today with the host of This American Life, Mr. Ira Glass. Hi, Ira.
Hi, how are you?
Great. I'm so thrilled to have you on our little local show here.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Hey, Mom, I'm co-hosting with Ira Glass. Hey, so one of the things I admire about you is that you're not complacent. You keep trying new things like broadcasting a radio show out through movie theaters or turning This American Life into TV, producing films. And now you're going to be coming to the Bay Area with a new show, three acts, two dancers, one radio host. And I think even you said that these two forms have no business being together. So why are you doing it, Ira?
Why I'm doing it is it just seemed like it was going to be fun. These are dancers who we had. We did a show on stage a year ago, May, that we did on stage and had cameras there and beamed it into movie theaters around the country. And it had these dancers, this dance troupe that I'd seen. And I thought there's something about them that felt like the same sensibility as the radio show, even though they use no words at all in their craft and are, you know, medium is all words. And I just thought, like, when we got done that show, people kept asking me, like, how do I see those dancers? Those dancers are amazing. And I was just like, you know, I tried to figure out something to do with the dancers. And we came up with this show where I tell stories and they dance, which I know sounds just
so
awful.
Wait, are they doing interpretive dance to your stories?
No, they're not. No, that's what sounds awful. It sounds like it's going to be like, and then the volcano explodes and the lava goes down. So, no, it's not like that at all. It's sort of hard to describe why it works, but like sometimes I tell stories, they dance. Sometimes it's just them. Sometimes it's just me. And there's something about it, the mix of it. Like there's something about their sensibility where they themselves, they're not a very traditional dance troupe. And there's something about them where when I first saw them, I just thought they're not like these iconic sort of statue dancers on stage, you know what I mean? Like modern dancers often are. They look just like regular people standing on stage, and the way that they move and express themselves is just, there's just something very like vulnerable and real about them. And in this way where a lot of the dances I'd seen of theirs, that it's almost like they were about these moments of very like small like awkwardness or embarrassment or something. So the two things combine in this way that's sort of hard to describe right here without showing it to you.
Well,
you know what I mean?
People can go see you. You're going to be here in the Bay Area in San Francisco, November 16th and 17th, and we'll let people know how they can get tickets in,
exactly.
In just
can
a
I
minute.
Say one
yes.
more thing about it, and that
yes,
is that
can.
It kills. Like it sounds like it shouldn't work at all, but we've done it now twice, and we've done it twice in Carnegie Hall, and it kills everywhere. Like it's a weird combination that weirdly works, and you know, we're bringing it to San Francisco, and this will probably be your only chance because who knows when we'll ever do this again. And that's all.
And, okay. So one more question about that: what motivates you to keep trying these new genres and, you know, mixing things that don't necessarily match intuitively?
I mean, it just seemed like it would work, and it seemed like it would be fun. It just seemed like we could make a big, fun, funny, emotional show. And when we started working together, like my sense and their sense of like, oh, we really do like that. Our work really does mesh. It came together very, very easily.
That's great. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And so that's November 16th and 17th at the Norse Theater in San Francisco. You can go online to KALW.org and see how you can get those tickets, because we are in our fall membership campaign. We'll be telling you about that in just a moment. It's a special edition of Cross Currents where we're geeking out on radio with Mr. Ira Glass. And now let's go to our first story. You're listening to a special hour-long live edition of Cross Currents with Mr. Radio himself, Ira Glass. We are bringing you this special to celebrate KALW's fall membership campaign. All right, radio people living in the 21st century, we are going to take a trip back in time, back to the origins of what you're hearing now. In the late 1800s, when Guglielmo Marconi figured out tall antennas could use radio waves to carry sounds over long distances, he had business in mind. But sending voices across the ocean simply wasn't possible yet, so users sent messages using Morse code. Not only was Morse code efficient to send, it was kind of an international language. Anyone who knew the Morse alphabet could use a standardized set of signals to talk to anyone else who knew that same set of signals.
Tazogli! Tazogli!
Help! Help me, help!
Hilfe! Ich brauche Hilfe!
Spazitzi nasch karabel! It was like a reverse Tower of Babel. For nearly 100 years, Morse code was the official language of international communication for ships in distress. Then, at the end of the 20th century, it officially went silent on the world's oceans, replaced by more modern technologies. This was the last message sent.
What? Hath? God? What hath God wrought?
On that day, July 12, 1999, the Morse operators who had tapped out these signals for years, even decades, gathered to say goodbye.
Those of us who were there found it to be a very emotional scene. Some very tough-looking old buzzards, radio pioneers, had tears in their eyes.
Morse code is mostly gone, but it's not forgotten. If you head down an unmarked, tree-lined lane in far west Marin, just beyond a field punctuated with antennas, you might start to hear the sounds of the past bubbling up into the present. KALW's Julie Kane brings us the story of marine radio station KPH, a lonely spot in the Point Reyes National Seashore where dots and dashes make the hearts of tough old buzzards go pitter-pat.
Getting close to 0100 hours Greenwich Mean Time, 0001 Greenwich Mean Time, we will begin our ceremonial broadcast.
A crowd of really excited people is gathered around Richard Dillman. He's the chief operator of the Maritime Radio Historical Society, and he's getting ready to send out a Morse code message to ships, ham radio operators, and other normally defunct marine radio stations like KPH. All of whom have turned on their old sets and tuned in for this special broadcast.
People around the world will be listening to us. They've been waiting for this all year. Tubes warming up, earphones going on, coffee getting hot, ready to hear these transmissions.
What we're waiting to hear is called the Night of Nights. It's an annual ceremony commemorating the very last commercial radio message sent in Morse code.
This station was originally founded in San Francisco at the Palace Hotel. Now, what does KPH stand for? The initials PH are the Palace Hotel. I'm Jack C. Martini. Like the drink, M-A-R-T-I-N-I. Just like the drink.
Jack Martini is 75 years old. He was the last manager of KPH, and he started working here in 1961. He stayed until the very end. He was the one who closed the door and turned out the lights when the station went dark. But before we get to that, back in 1905, the station was set up as a way for merchants and ship owners to communicate with ships out at sea, and as a way for wealthy cruise ship passengers to check on their stocks and investments back home. Yes, even then, the drive for constant connectedness was very strong. The station was destroyed in the 1906 earthquake and fire, and eventually relocated to this remote corner of Point Reyes in 1946, after stops in San Francisco, Daly City, and Tomales Bay. And except for a few years during World War II, KPH stayed on the air. It was a money-making business. Sending messages cost 50 cents a word, which even now isn't cheap.
It was alive. There was so much going on all of the time. It was a hum of a place, and you walk in here, it was humming. People were doing it, moving around.
You go like this.
Copying code, yelling and screaming, and, you know, all that type of stuff, which made it more than just a job. It was a way of life, is exactly what it was for us. Absolutely loved it. This is KPH San Francisco Radio. That's what I just said. It was like a death in the family when they closed it. And, it's still here, though, isn't it?
It sure is. We're in a room filled with buttons and switches, dials and consoles. People are happily tapping away on gadgets called bugs and keys. Morse code is in danger of dying out. There are only a handful of people who are still truly fluent. Dave Wolf is one of them.
And Dave, will you be willing to do your simultaneous translation as you have in the past?
Yeah, if I can get there.
All right. Well, Dave is an ace commercial operator from our sister station WCC on Cape Cod, also a shipboard radio operator. So the genuine article right here.
All eyes are on a big clock. Wolf and Dillman will start their transmission at precisely 5:01 p.m., the moment back in 1999 when Morse code use officially ended on the world's oceans.
Okay, we're coming up to the time.
Calling all stations from KPH, KFS, and KSM. Warm greetings to all listeners ashore and afloat. Stop.
Dillman and his crew will be sending and receiving messages until midnight. And some of the time, they'll just be listening.
The signal that we were hearing is on the most hallowed, may I say, sacred frequency of all time. It's the frequency that the Titanic used to call for distress. It's the frequency on which every SOS was sent from that day forward. 500 kilocycles, just below the AM broadcast band.
Is after the Titanic, they wanted people to hear lifeboats, which are always weak. 10 watts. So they set up these two periods an hour.
That time is called the silent period, and during it, nobody says a word. They don't want to miss any calls for help. Before I leave, I asked Dave Wolf one more question.
Can you do K-A-L-W?
That's it. FM. Cross current sounds like this.
At KPH, this is Julie Kane. For cross currents.
KPH is open to visitors most Saturdays. For more information, go to our website, kalw.org. Coming up, we'll hear from the nation's first bilingual radio station, which got started right here in the Bay Area.
One of the stories that one of the founders told us was that they bought little transistor radios. Back in the day, you could get one for $3, and they went around the neighborhoods and gave every family one of those, mm-hmm. and literally created their listenership mm-hmm. from that.
Gotta love that marketing strategy. I'm Holly Kernan here with the king of public radio, Mr. Ira Glass. And we're going to get to hear about Ira's early days in radio in just a moment. But first, I want to mention that we're right near the end of our fall No Interruption membership drive, which means it's the best and pretty much the last time to support KALW, which is independent, locally grown, commercial-free radio. So you can go to kalw.org, and you'll see all of the thank you gifts there, including tickets to Ira's new show coming to San Francisco in November. It's kalw.org. And Ira, would you give out the phone number for folks?
The phone number is 1-800-525-9917.
1-800-525-9917. If you call now, Ira Glass will thank you on air, but only during this hour. We're going to post all of the audio online. So now is your chance to have Mr. Public Radio himself, Ira Glass, thank you for being a supporter of public radio. You can call us at 1-800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org. And if you think your name might be challenging to pronounce, just clue us in about that. So, Ira, I wanted to ask you about your early days in radio. We were just listening to the sort of really early days of radio about the Maritime radio and the Morse code. You wrote jokes for a local Baltimore radio personality when you were in high school? Is that right?
Yeah, when I was in high school, I wasn't a big radio listener, and public radio didn't really become like a thing until the 70s, and really, like, most people hadn't heard of it really until the 1980s. And so I had never listened to public radio before I started working in public radio. And so in high school, I listened to the local, like, there was a AM station, a local sort of proto shock jock named Johnny Walker. And like every teenage boy I knew, like, the, you know, like, we all were super fans. And I wrote him a letter, an actual letter, to the radio station he was at, WFBR AM, and enclosed three single spaced pages of jokes, hoping that he might do them. He did a little news segment every morning, but he was quite something. And he called me up on the phone. It was amazing, like somebody who I had heard on the radio calling me on the phone. And then he sent a car. A limo to come. He had a driver.
Wow.
And a limo. I know. I know. It was the first
time.
It
was a different
ever been...
days of radio, huh?
And he was on AM. And it's funny because I only realized much later, he wasn't allowed to drive because of DUIs. And so the only way that he could. It's true.
Johnny Walker.
Yeah, Johnny Walker. Weird how that would have worked out. And then I remember going to his house in a part of Baltimore that was much schmancier than I had ever been in. Called Roland Park, and he had this house, and I remember on the walls he had paintings that were sort of imitation Rembrandts, you know, like imitation Rembrandts. So it was all like, you know, extreme, like chiaroscuro. And then, but when you looked at them, you realized, like, oh no, the figures in them are the Beatles. And and so it was like the coolest thing that had ever happened. And I would write jokes for him and drop them off at the radio station the summer between my junior and senior year of high
school. Do you remember any of these jokes? Like, what kind of jokes?
They were like the kinds of jokes that Jay Leno tells in his monologue, but not as classy, not as good. And they were about the news, and they were not. I was not so super good at it, but I was good enough that I got, like, I did a, you know, like I would get a couple in the air every day. And then Johnny Walker off the air was a real sweetheart, and I think just the notion of, like, a kid who wanted to, like, be in radio appealed to him, and he would let me come and watch him do the show. And I remember going there during drive time in the morning. So it was really,
that's such a great story.
It was really kind of dreamy and magical, and, you know, to be driving downtown to this rough neighborhood where the radio station was, and you know, at 5:30 in the morning to drop off jokes for my hero, and then watch him do the show, which had all kinds of sound effects and tape carts and, you know, people clapping on sound effect and music cues, and, like, it was a super produced live thing. He was very, very good.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. That's Ira Glass, and he is my co-host today in this special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. We're in our fall membership drive. We've been bringing it to you without interruptions, just taking kind of the natural breaks to remind you that you are what makes public radio work, what makes it commercial-free. And if you call or go online right now and become a member, Ira Glass himself will thank you on air. You can do that by going to kalw.org or giving us a call at 1-800-525-9917. 9917. We're not taking time to talk about all the thank you gifts. They'll tell you about it on the phone, or you can look at them online. It's kalw.org, or call us at 1-800-525-9917, and Ira will thank you himself. All right, so go ahead, Ira.
I feel like the way you're talking about me is so weird to me.
I feel like it's really weird. I'm sitting
right here. I'm a person right here. But anyway, yeah, okay.
So I'm no Jimmy Kimmel, but it's like when Jimmy Kimmel got to interview Letterman. That's how I feel.
Okay. Thank you for putting that in context. I can understand. Understood.
All right. So 1-800-525-9917 or kalw.org. All right. So you had this first job writing jokes for Johnny Walker in Baltimore. How did you end up at NPR then?
The summer after my freshman year in college, I wanted to do something just in the media. I wasn't very picky in any TV station, radio station, ad agency, anything like that. And I grew up in Baltimore and went around to all the places. And somebody at the album-oriented rock station, in the basement of a strip mall, but a station that I listened to, of course, said, well, we don't have anything for you. We don't have an internship, but there's this new outfit called National Public Radio. This is 78. That this is happening. And he said, there's this new outfit, and they've been around for just 4 or 5 years. And a friend of mine from college is there, and you could give him a call. And so I went over to D.C., which is, an hour away from Baltimore, and kind of talked my way into an internship making promos for the shows. It was so early at NPR. They only had a couple of national shows, and Morning Edition didn't exist. And it was all fed over phone lines. They didn't have a satellite yet. And it was two stories of a building downtown, and it was very early days for NPR, I made promos for the summer, and then one of the promos impressed. They had a producer, one guy on staff whose job was to invent new ways to do radio documentary. His name was Keith Talbot, and he hired me the following summer to be his production assistant. And really, half of everything I know about radio, I learned from Keith. Keith used music in his shows, and he would have characters who were in the stories narrate the stories. And then he worked with all kinds of people. I remember the very first show I worked on with him was with a guy named Joe Frank, who was has now been on radio for years down in Los Angeles. But at the time, he had been like a local guy in New York, and he would tell stories on the radio. I had never heard anybody tell a story on the radio. And I remember sitting in the studio watching him record a story, and I could play you a little bit of what he sounded like. I mean, some people know he's done many, many hours of radio, and super hardcore public radio fans might know him. And
if you I remember his name. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, but here's a typical thing. I'll play you a clip.
Okay.
This is Joe from that era.
Then I'm riding up the elevator of my building. I'm standing there, sharing the small space with a terrific-looking girl. But I feel shy, uncomfortable. I scratch my head. I sigh. I gaze up at the numbers of the floors lighting up one after another.
Anyway, this goes on for 3.5 minutes of his discomfort and what's going through his head. And I have to say, it's a little bit sexist, and you would never do it today. But it has a feeling, all of his work has this feeling of, I remember listening to him thinking, there is something about the way you're doing this where I feel like I cannot, I just want to find out what's going to happen next, and I don't know why. And it seems bigger than the sum of its parts. And I had never heard anything on the radio that was good. You know what I mean? I never heard anybody tell a story, because people don't tell stories on the radio. I had never gotten that feeling from anything on the radio. And I was just like, I just want to know how to do that. And so my parents were very committed to the idea that I was going to be a doctor, because we're Jews. And that summer I also worked at the shock trauma unit at University of Maryland Hospital. And at the end of the summer, I just felt like, oh, I know which one of these things I prefer most. Keith's shows were so much more adventurous than what I do now. I remember he did this show called Ocean Hour. And this is it's so typical for him where first of all, there's entirely sound design. So there's incredibly beautiful music written for it and the sound of the ocean. And then the segments would be the people in the stories would just narrate their own story. There would be no narration. And then to get you from segment to segment rather than kind of a traditional narrator. What they would have is they had two guys. This is like you're saying, it was two guys sitting on a dock, and one guy was telling the other about this imaginary friend he had when he was a kid. And the imaginary friend knew everything about the ocean, which sounds great. Do you want to hear another clip?
Sure.
Here, all right, I'll keep the.
So you seem like somebody who really understands the ocean.
This is the narrator's.
You know, really knows about it.
No, I don't. I don't think anybody is an expert on the ocean. It's too big. It's like wondering if anybody's an expert on the planet. You know. Sometimes I think about this character, which I just invented.
Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know how this is playing over the radio now, but it was like, what is this? You know what I mean? And I don't know. I really got hooked by the dreaminess of it and the forward momentum of it. Yeah.
That's Ira.
That's
Ira Glass. He is the host, as you well know, of This American Life, and he's giving us a little insight into how he got where he is. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kern, and Ira will be back in just a moment. You can go online to KALW.org and become a member supporter of local public radio. Actually, local public radio pays fees to people like Ira to make This American Life, so you would be supporting This American Life when you become a member of KALW right now, KALW.org. And then you can listen as we continue our radio show all about radio. We're here on the radio dial at 91.7 FM. Don't change stations now, but if you tune in to 89.1 FM pretty much anywhere in the Bay Area, you'll hear this.
Estás escuchando KBBF 89.1, Calistoga, Santa Rosa, y gran parte del norte de California.
You're listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa, the voice of your community.
40 years ago, KBBF was the first station in the country to hit the airwaves in both English and Spanish. As it celebrates its anniversary, KALW's Martina Castro went to see how this scrappy station came to be and how it continues to serve a growing and diverse community.
Lorenzo Oropesa kicks off his weekly show with La Canción Mixteca. It's an old Mexican folk song from Oaxaca, and it's about feeling homesick for the land where you were born.
Muchísimas gracias, auditorio de KBBF. Mi nombre es Lorenzo Oropesa, como todos los domingos.
Oropesa's show is called Caminos Indígenas. It's a mix of music and information, mostly about education and health. It's just him behind a small board and a computer, pushing buttons to cue up songs and microphones. He switches fluidly between Spanish and Mixteco, an indigenous Oaxacan language. But as he cues up the next song, he stumbles a bit. Someone from the other room jumps in to help him get things back on track. And once they do, Oropesa turns to me and he tells me he got a little nervous. He doesn't get to practice this all the time. He's not always a radio host.
He actually works for California Rural Legal Assistance as a field worker. He's out there with the campesinos every day. He knows what the life is like. My name's Josue Lopez and I'm the program director and the board treasurer of KBBF.
Lopez says KBBF was built by volunteers like Lorenzo Oropesa. In 2003, Oropesa was invited to be a guest on Caminos Indígenas to talk about workers' rights. He stuck around, got some radio training, and in 2010, he became the host.
If you want to know what KBBF is about, that comes closest to representing what we're trying to achieve here.
Dave Yanda is on the station's board of directors. He says a huge part of their mission is to build a station where anyone can walk in and be part of what's going on.
So give me a little tour of what you've got in your new offices.
What we have is...
When you walk in the door at KBBF, a handmade sign welcomes you. There are free tomatoes from someone's garden on the table near the front door. The rest of the space is clean and organized, but half-assembled tables and boxes are just a few signs that they're still moving in to their new offices. Again, Josue Lopez.
We've only been here 6 weeks, so we're still in process and we're still going to keep on going.
I see signs of construction and building stuff, so yeah, it seems in progress.
It's very much in progress. We seem to keep going for some reason. We've been on the air 40 years, and they told me when I was here 38, 36 or 37 years ago that it was an impossible project. Little did they know who they were dealing with.
Lopez says back then, who they were dealing with was a group of young activists.
They call themselves Los Pioneros, the pioneers, because that's what they were, really. But these people were in their teens.
It was the 1960s, and the Chicano movement had been highlighting the needs of recent immigrants and Mexican Americans.
A lot of us spoke Spanish or English or both at the same time, the famous Spanglish moniker that came to be known as. But basically it was a way of recognizing that we as a group had a cultural identity that we could grab onto.
But that cultural identity had practically no place in media, and certainly not on radio airwaves. Lopez says there was only one broadcaster airing Spanish language radio.
A man named Cándido Morales, who actually had a radio program on commercial stations at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sundays. And that was 1 hour. You know, that was the extent of Spanish language programming on commercial radio in Sonoma County. And that was very similar to what was going on everywhere else.
Los Pioneros had their work cut out for them. They had no money, and they were targeting an audience mostly made up of agricultural workers who spoke no English and had no fixed address.
And it's an FM station, and FM was just beginning, was just starting up. So there wasn't even FM radios for us to transmit to.
But the founders were savvy. They found multiple sources of federal and grant funding to keep the station going. And Board Vice President Dave Yanda says they had another idea.
One of the stories that one of the founders told us was that they bought little transistor radios. Back in the day, you could get one for $3, and they went around the neighborhoods and gave every family one of those, mm-hmm. and literally created their listenership.
And over the years, the station's program schedule started to grow into what it is today.
In the morning, we've got programming addressing the worker, especially the farm worker out there. Very traditional Mexican music. And then we've got a heavy news and information strip across the morning, starting out with Democracy Now! En Español.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy
Now! Desde Radio Pacifica, esto es Democracy Now!
Hi, join me, Julie Combs, with Evelina Molina.
Radio Conciencia is a production by Evelina Molina. One of her segments is a weekly interview with one of our city council members.
Radio Bilingüe presenta Línea Abierta.
Línea Abierta is one of the most popular programs in Spanish in the country.
Back when KBBF launched, it was clear who these shows were for. Today, it's not so obvious. The potential audience is much more diverse, with varying levels of fluency in Spanish, English, and indigenous languages.
We have 1.3, close to 1.4 million people in our listening area who identify as Latino or bilingual. Clearly, there are different sociological layers that comprise our community. We've got recent arrivals by the planeful and truckful and boatful.
Then there are Latinos like him, who were born in Mexico, but who are now American citizens and were educated here.
And there's people like my daughter, who is just graduated from Mills College. She has become part of the, not just the Latino establishment, the mainstream establishment here. She owns a little chocolate shop in Berkeley.
About 95% of Latinos in the U.S. tune in to the radio at least once a week. That's more than any other ethnic group. And right now, Lopez says he wants people of his daughter's generation to see KBBF as their station.
We need to draw upon that part of the community to also come in here, get involved, and actually build a structure that can be around for another 40 years.
Building that structure got a lot harder in 2008. That's when they found out that the station's manager at the time, Jesus Lozano, had a drug conviction, and he began serving a 5-year prison sentence. That's also when the Corporation for Public Broadcasting conducted an audit and found that the station's leadership had seriously mismanaged funds between 2005 and 2008. So KBBF lost its federal funding.
When the station was organized, we did not put into place the kind of infrastructure that an organization like this needs to be credible. We struggled on and off for years.
Since then, the station has gotten new leadership, and the members of the board are promising honest and open governance. Financially, they're still struggling, but they're still on the air.
¿Qué quieres ser cuando seas grande? Tú, Elena.
We're sort of flying by the seat of our pants all the time, which is great. It's exciting. It's fun. But I'm reaching an age where I see the value of organization and even to some extent of bureaucracy.
So it's time for some changes at KBBF. But the mission is the same. The need for bilingual programming isn't going away, and they still need an army of dedicated volunteers to pull it off.
Well, thank you. Is there anything that you didn't get to say that you'd like to say?
I have an opening for a programmer.
Well, it never hurts to ask. From one community station to another, I'm Martina Castro for Cross Currents.
Al norte de California, se escucha con amor. La estación KBBF.
Coming up, we'll visit a place that brings the Caribbean to the bay. It's Radio Habana in San Francisco's Mission District.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're joined today by the public radio revolutionary Ira Glass. I loved hearing that story, and especially this idea of giving out radios to create your audience. I think that's so cool.
I respect the resourcefulness of that.
Yes, I'm thinking of taking that up. And one of the things I actually worry about in this time of, you know, digital disruption and all these big changes in how people consume and fund media is that what's likely to disappear is local, and places where people can learn and get a start may not be around. What do you consider to be the value of local, Ira?
I mean, the value of local programming is obvious. I mean, it's nice to have something that's about where you live. I mean, it's nice to be hearing your own community on the radio. And truthfully, in a lot of public radio markets, a lot of places, right now it's so easy for a public radio station to be successful simply by plugging into the national programs. The national programs can get an audience. The stations can get pledges that a lot of stations don't do much actual local programming. And for there to be a station which actually has such a commitment to it the way that KALW has is increasingly rare. Like that is definitely not true everywhere. And so I hope people who listen all the time, I hope you pledge, I hope you consider pledging. I know that, you know, the pledge drives come and the pledge drives go, and most people hearing our voices right now, they just think, somebody else is going to pledge. And I would just say, like, you know, if you feel that way, I would just have you, like, look in the mirror right now, okay? You sticking around to listen to the pledge drive, you know what I mean? Like, what I'm doing now, like, this is just a pledge break. This isn't even interesting. And you're still here, and I just ask you to just kind of take a look in the mirror and... Who are you? You are the actual person who sticks around during the pledge drive. What does that say about your relationship to KALW? And if you can be honest with yourself, aren't you listening enough that you don't even change the station during the pledge breaks? Doesn't that mean that you should be calling the phone number 800-525-9917? Doesn't that mean you should be getting online at KALW.org and pledging? And even when I say these things, if you even know the phone number before I say it, what does that say about your level of listening? And, you know, we say, like, okay, we want people who are like the people who listen all the time, we want you, you know, you listen all the time, and chances are if you're hearing our voices, you've never pledged, you've never done it at all. I just, who do you think that we're talking to? Like, who do you think is the target audience? And the way that we organize it here and at all the stations, it is the fairest, best system possible. It's a system that they're imitating on the internet. Yeah. And the system is that whatever level you think you can afford, whatever it's worth to you, just pitch in that level. If it's $5, that's great. Be part of the team. You know what I mean? If it's a lot more, if you can afford, I think it's like $1 a day to come to this like party we're having, a meet and greet before the dance show that I'm doing in November.
It's going to be so fun.
If you can afford that level, that'll be awesome. It'll be really nice to see you. But really, like any level, and it's like if you know the number 800-525-9917 to know it before I say it, like you're our target. You are the person who we're talking to when we say. And the other thing that I would say is that the kind of thing that happens on KALW on all the shows and that happens on the national shows is all the same. And that is like what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out a way to bring voices on the air and stories on the air that you can't hear anywhere else. And can I talk for another minute, Holly? Is that okay?
Yeah, Ira, you can talk as long as you want. But let me just remind people to go to KALW.org and then, Ira, you have some people you're going to thank after you talk for another minute.
I do. Actually, let me thank them first because that seems like better. Hold on. No, this music is too down. Let's go to this stuff. Here we go. Yeah, I think that's the right amount of
downbeat. This is the right thank you.
I think so. I want to thank these people who were so nice to call and let us and help pay for the work that we do here at KALW and around the country. And because of you, Holly and I have a job. Okay, because of you, Holly and I get to come in here and we get to do this thing that we feel so strongly about doing. Thank you to Masaru Fisher of San Francisco. Thanks to Elaine Tibbis of Oakland. Thank you, Pamela Pedrazzini of San Rafael, a new member. Thank you so I get a salary each week. And so, Holly, do you have kids?
I do. I have a daughter, so Julia. So
Holly can feed breakfast to her daughter. So Holly has a job doing this thing. Thank you, John Flanders, so that all the people here can, you know, have health benefits. Thanks, James Frank, so we can turn on the transmitter at KALW. Thank you, Joan Kiley, so we can do the work and make the stories that we do. Thank you, Jessica Chanik. Thank you, Linda Locke of San Mateo. Thank you, San Mateo, far away. Thank you, Carrie Mark of San Francisco. Thank you, Judith Bloom of Berkeley. Thank you all for donating to KALW, and I hope if you're hearing our voices, you'll donate. And can I say, like often we're in a situation as public broadcasters where we'll see something going on in the world and we think, like, what can we do about this ourselves? Like, what's a story we can do? And you do this at your show, Holly, and we do it at our show at This American Life. And so just kind of a dramatic example of that. Like last year, there were all these shootings in Chicago.
Yeah.
We're based out of a Chicago public radio station. There were 504 shootings in a year. The number was going up. In most big cities, it's been going down. It's a huge, crazy, huge number of people getting shot. And we tried to figure out a way to do it. And at first, on Memorial Day weekend of that year, like something like over 50 people were shot. And at one point, we're just like, well, let's just document these 50 people. That'll be the episode. But it turns out that those cases were caught up in court. We couldn't get people to talk to us. And we're just like, what do we do? And we ended up finding this high school, Harper High School, that had experienced 29 shootings in one school year, 29 shootings of current and recent students in one school year. And we thought, like, the people at this school are going through something that most of us only hear about, and we should go in there and document what is it that they know about living with this level of violence that we don't know. And one of the things that was really incredible about Harper, and we ended up sending three reporters there for 5 months to document what goes on at that school. And we did two episodes of our show and you know, like, and we learned all kinds of things that honestly, like, we had no idea about. Even gang life in the school has changed so much from what gangs were in Chicago, like, in the last few years. And I feel like we were able to do, because it's radio, to go into a place. And because it's radio, like, the stories have such intimacy and you can get to know the people so thoroughly. And I don't know, like, there's this thing I don't know, there's this thing which happens, you know, like one of the things we learned is like every kid in the school is in a gang. Like the way the gangs work, they aren't even criminal enterprises. They don't sell drugs. They don't make money. Basically, the gangs are just like little cliques. It's like your high school clique. And in order to get through this neighborhood that they're in, Englewood, West Englewood, it's so dangerous. Basically, every kid is in the gang. And so, you know, I feel like this thing happens where, you know, you read in the paper where like, oh, a kid got shot and he was in a gang. And I think a lot of people, you just think like, oh, that must have been a bad kid, his kid in trouble. Like every kid in the school, the drama kids, the smart kids, like every kid in the school is in a gang. And
it's a completely rational choice there.
Yes, the cops say it's better that they're in the gang because they get protection on their way to school. The school cops said this to us on tape. And so I don't know, I feel like there's so many things, big and small. And also the staff of that school, super competent. Great staff of school, as you hear over the course of the 2 hours.
Except they had that big investment, right? That was a one-time thing that was going away.
That was going away, yeah.
That was an amazing piece of journalism, and that's what This American Life does so beautifully. We're here with Ira Glass. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. We're talking about the value and the power of public media, which is made by you when you support it. KALW.org or call 800-525-9917. You can continue to do that in our No Interruption Drive, KALW.org. Scroll through the thank you notes. We'll be back with Ira in just a moment. We're going to go and hear one more radio story right now. And now we move to one of San Francisco's most rapidly changing neighborhoods, the Mission. Historically, it's been a Latino enclave, but these days it's an area where new businesses pop up regularly, where rents are skyrocketing, where there are so many restaurants on one street that neighbors considered a ban on new eateries. But within this swirling change are some anchors of the old Mission. They can be hard to find, unless you know what to listen for. I've walked by this little place on Valencia called Radio Habana, and I've been so intrigued by the name and the colorful storefront. So for this special radio edition of Cross Currents, we decided to finally find out, what is this place? We sent KALW's Lila Day, who used to live in Havana, to find out.
The inside of Radio Habana looks like a hoarder's paradise, a junk shop, a thrift shop, an art installation. There's a trout hanging from the ceiling with the plastic legs of a brown baby doll. Next to the trout is a pig in a tutu. Next to that, abandoned Barbies. It is chaotic in here. It was meant to be this way. The owners are artists and wanted the space to feel quirky and lived in. Today, the room's filled with people. Percussionists, neighbors, tourists. It feels a bit like a Roomba gathering in Cuba. There's that same constant laughter and that same faint smell of sweat and booze in the air. Percussionist Gustavo Ramos is standing in front of the room, his conga drum near the wall. Ramos tells me that the familiarity that one feels in Cuba with friends and neighbors, well, the only place you find that in San Francisco is Radio Habana. He says the people who come here call each other family. That's why he brings his son, who's sitting at the bar doing his homework. And the music here reflects the African-influenced culture of the country he left in 2009. It's one of the things Ramos misses most. The word rumba means party, but it comes from a serious place, from Cuba's slave barracks back in the late 1800s. It was one of the ways that slaves would express their faith and their struggle. They made music with anything that could make good sound, spoons, boxes, whatever was around. There are plenty of spoons at Radio Havana and plenty of boxes. And after a while, even the blank stare of the upside-down teddy bear feels a little bit comforting.
This is one of the rare places where parents and children can bump into each other on a Friday night and not know, you come here, you come here.
Leila Mansour and her husband, artist Victor Navarrete, opened Radio Havana in 1999, hoping it would be like a gathering in Havana. where neighbors know each other and the music brings people together. And that intimate, familiar feeling is what makes Radio Havana an anchor. In a neighborhood where not much else seems to last.
Native San Franciscans tell us that this is the San Francisco that they are afraid is disappearing.
She's seen lots of change in the mission in the nearly 15 years the club's been open. Lots of rents going up, lots of businesses moving out. Right now, San Francisco is nearly the most expensive rental market in the country, second only to Honolulu. Mansour says that her landlord thinks that Radio Havana is what gives this corner some flavor. And that's why he keeps the rent affordable. As the afternoon goes on, a group of musicians gather in a semicircle. It's time for the rumba to really begin. The song always starts with two sticks, or the clave, which means the key. It's the beat that holds the rhythm. Then it goes into a chant. After about an hour, the room is packed. Everyone crowds around the musicians. Strangers are dancing with each other. Some of them aren't even dancing rumba, just dancing. The sangrias run out. People join in with the chorus, whether they speak Spanish or not. Look around and you'll see signs of the faraway country. The Cuban flag and pictures of national figures like José Martí. Even though nobody's talking politics here right now, it's a reminder that there's a real Radio Havana too, a state-run shortwave radio station in Cuba that broadcasts news about the island.
Esta es Radio Havana, Cuba.
Transmitiendo desde Cuba, territorio libre en América.
For more than 50 years, this Radio Havana has been broadcasting things like speeches by Fidel Castro, criticism of the American embargo, and music and interviews with artists. Though the owners didn't intend it that way, there's a way in which Radio Havana Social Club is a little like that shortwave broadcast radio that comes out of Cuba. They see themselves as broadcasting a message of community. It's not just the music, though that helps evoke the feel of the country. It's not just the food and the fellowship, though that helps too. It's the fact that, like the shortwave Radio Havana, this club is also on a kind of island, surrounded by a lot of rapid change, doing what it does with pride, broadcasting to the masses, hoping that people are listening. From Radio Havana in La Calle Valencia, I'm Lila Day for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm here with our special guest, Ira Glass. And we just heard about a hidden gem that's become a gathering place for lovers of Afro-Cuban music. And we like to take you to places like these and tell you the stories that define the Bay Area and really try to connect this little village of 7 million. Become a member and show your support for KALW by calling 1-800-525-9919. 17 or go to kalw.org. Speaking of dance and radio, Ira is going to be here in San Francisco November 16th and 17th to perform a new show. He's calling three acts, two dancers, and one radio host. You can get tickets and meet Ira and become a member of KALW at the dollar a day donation level. Go to kalw.org. So will there be roombaing in the show, Ira?
There are no Roombas in the show. No, many other kinds of dance, but no Roombas. There's a cha-cha at one point.
Oh, my. And yeah. Do you do any of this dancing, or are you strictly doing the radio piece?
I mean, there are a couple times during the show where I join the dancers very, very briefly. But I don't want to oversell that.
Well,
and
I think
dance
we're just
about
gonna
as
have
well
to all...
as a person in his 50s, you might imagine. I feel like they are amazing dancers, and I'm lucky to be on stage with them.
Well, we're talking about the value of local radio, and I had to cut you off a little bit there at the end. If you would give another pitch, and I'm sending you some more people to thank in just a second, Ira.
I mean, what I would just say, again, if you've been listening all the time, if you've been thinking at some point you will donate to KALW, why not do it now? Like, why torture these people by making them wait? If you've been thinking about doing it, don't wait. Go to the phone now and dial 800-525-9917 or go to KALW.org. And again, the idea is just an incredibly fair one, that each of us who likes these kinds of things on the radio, the system that keeps it on the air is not that you know, advertisers pay for it. It's that those of us who like it, we pitch in, which is just enormously,
and which makes it non-commercial, which everybody loves.
Which makes it, yeah, exactly.
And you know what's so funny is that people are poaching the public radio model. I mean, Kickstarter is basically the public radio model.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, one of the models for journalism on the internet is, you know, how do we do independent journalism and get people to pay for it? And one of the models is just called the public radio model. You know, people just, you know, basically do their work and ask people for donations. I mean, that's what Andrew Sullivan's doing. That's what, you know, that's what lots of sites are doing.
What do you think of it as a business model?
I mean, I think it's great. Like, I think it's actually like a great business model because those of us who like a thing, like, why not pay for the thing? And I think like you know, it's expensive to do the shows. I mean, I think that one of the things is we all kind of take it for granted. And even though we all hear the pledge drives come and the pledge drives go, and we just feel like, somebody else is going to pay. Statistically, one of the things that we know from audience surveys is that someone else is not paying. That's why we're asking you to donate at 800-525-9917. I was explaining about that Harper High School thing we did. You know, that was three reporters in a school for 5 months. You know, it's incredibly expensive and labor intensive. And even the stories that you heard tonight over the course of this hour made for this radio show, you know, each one represents days of work, you know, for the 8 or 10 minutes that you end up hearing on the air. A show like ours, like, we will look into many more things than ever actually end up on the air, you know, and it's the only way to end up with the kind of material at a level of quality that, you know, we think people want and that we want to put on the air.
Hey, Ira, can you thank the people who became members? Because we're just running out of time.
Yes. And the only name that I have here I've gotten from you in email is Peter Zing. So Peter Zing, thank you.
Okay, so I will say the names and you can thank them after. Ben Trefney in San Francisco.
Hey, Ben Trefney, thanks so much.
Lisa Carmack, who's in Ghana.
Lisa Carmack is in Ghana listening to the show from Ghana. You have a really dedicated listener base.
Emmett Holton.
Hey, Emmett Holtman, thanks so much.
Holton.
Oh, Emmett Holton. See, you gave money to the radio station and your name was mispronounced. It's sad, really. Yeah, thank you for helping us keep everything going here.
Corey Van Leuven of Cupertino.
Corey Van Leuven, I am pretty sure that your donation is going to be to keep the creaky old computers on which people are mixing with secondhand software running safely and getting stories onto the air.
Greg Matza and Gail Ganino.
Greg Matza and Gail Ganino. KLW is kind of a rundown place, and they're going to need to buy new reporters' kits sometime very soon, and I bet that your money is going to go to that.
And finally, Sohan Mazumdar.
Sohan Mazumdar, they should just give you your pledge for free just for having such an awesome name. But thank you anyway for donating to KALW.
And thank you to Ira Glass. Thanks to our amazing crew at Cross Currents. Casey Miner and Ben Trefney produced this show. Seth Samuel and Chris Hoff are our sound designers. Thank you, Ira Glass. Thanks to everybody who became a member. We're going to go to the NPR newscast in progress. Thank you, Ira.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Holly Kernan.